Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome everyone. It's Friday, which means it's time for Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Plenty of soft drink and snack options, water. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day, and the pickle bar is second to none. Time to stock up for the weekend. Do it now at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And it's obvious what our play-by-play call of the day is, and we have both versions of it. Last night, the only time the Green Bay Packers led was at the end on the Hail Mary from Aaron Rodgers to Richard Rodgers. We pick up the call on TMJ in Milwaukee with Wayne Larrivee, the voice of the Packers.
Aaron Rodgers alone of the shotgun. Three receivers left, two to the right. Davante Adams in motion to the right. Snap to Rodgers. Scrambles to his left, under pressure, rolling right, escapes, right side looking, rainbows high and deep into the end zone, and it is caught for a touchdown, a leaping touchdown catch is made, and the Packers have won.
Wayne Larrivee with the call. Wayne, of course, has been a guest on our show here before, but it wouldn't be complete fun in the segment if we didn't get the call from Don Miller on WTAQ with the Lions version of it.
Rodgers out of the gun. He's back. They need 61 yards and a touchdown. Rodgers rolling to his left. Being chased, slips the tackle. Rodgers is stepping up and lofting it deep down the field into the end zone. It is up and it is caught. Caught by the Packers. Richard Rodgers for a touchdown. Oh, no!
That sums it up. That is our play-by-play call of the day from Wayne Larrivee from the Packers side and Don Miller from the Lions side. Well, let's stick with the pro football theme because the Steelers will take on the Colts. That'll be Sunday night. We bring in Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, welcome. Anybody find Antonio Brown yet?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Doing great. Have they found Antonio Brown?
Yeah. He's still arguing with Richard Sherman, I guess.
I watched that game, and the only guy I saw in the picture was 25.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, the guys in the picture the most time were the Steelers defensive backs for the wrong reason, unfortunately. Yeah. You're able to read their numbers very clearly. On Sunday, the Steelers defensive backs, you know, no question Richard Sherman won that battle, but that opened things up for a lot of other guys. And I think the Steelers will take that trade every time. Martavis Bryant with a fairly big game when he actually caught the football, and Marcus Wheaton with kind of a breakout game, which I think the Steelers needed to have happen because I think, you know, they knew the kind of attention and the kind of talent that Brown was going to be facing. But at the end of the day, Steve, when you're putting up 30, you know, over and over again, and you're sitting at 6-5, out of the playoff picture at this point, this is a team that it's not shocking that we're talking about their biggest issue being the secondary. I think we knew that was the case. Yeah. But, boy, it just doesn't seem to be making a whole lot of strides. And, in fact, it's putting them behind the eight ball.
I assume Roethlisberger does play this week.
He practiced full bore on Wednesday, was a full participant in their limited drills yesterday. We'll see what he does today. But, yeah, I assume, barring any kind of a setback, he's ready to go. It wouldn't be a Ben Roethlisberger injury, though, if there wasn't some controversy involved in it. I don't even know if there had to be in this case. But Ben made sure that there was. And, you know, after 12 years here, I guess in Pittsburgh, we're kind of used to Ben – you know, finding something to talk about that's different in some degree or some shade from what the organization says or whatever the case is. That's not new. Doesn't seem to change his performance. But, you know, it is interesting. It is a little bit odd, I think. But, yeah, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, saying he did not have a concussion, that it was a an ocular migraine diagnosis, which causes Mike Tomlin to just, you know, kind of roll his eyes and say, well, he's in the concussion protocol. So whatever the case may be, it's another week, another injury with Ben Roethlisberger.
Look, everybody that's ever had a concussion, all right, they've all denied, I'm fine, I'm good. All right.
True. Yeah, very true.
Okay, that's happens almost every time. What about Heath Miller?
The guy that Mike Tomlin called Earl Miller in his press conference. Maybe it's Mike that has the concussion. But he actually referred to him as Earl Miller in his press conference this week. I don't know how that happened. Heath Miller, you know, left the game with a rib injury, came back very briefly, and then left again. He has been, you know, to say limited, that's the term that the Steelers use. That's a generous word. He hasn't really done anything in practice this week. And, again, I don't know, you know, what the status is today. They're actually heading out to the field here very shortly, I believe. You know, frankly, if Heath Miller's out, there's no question that it's a big drop-off for Pittsburgh. But Jesse James has done a very good job filling in, you know, kind of for Miller and kind of for Spaeth. They've kind of, you know, both of those backups have kind of blended together to fill Heath Miller's role. And that's a lot of pressure to ask a guy like Jesse James to become Heath Miller, you know, right away. But he's done well. And I think that drop-off isn't as big a problem as the Steelers probably feared that it would be. Matt Spaeth is a fantastic blocker. It's why he's in the NFL. And Jesse James, we know he can catch passes. And his blocking has, you know, he's worked a ton to improve it. And it has improved. Are either of those guys Heath Miller? No. But I don't think that's as big a drop-off as we might have feared it would have been, even a month ago.
Has Jesse James slowly but surely started to gain some favor in the organization because of what he's done?
Yeah, you know, I think there's no question he has. I mean, they loved his talent level. They loved his skill. He really probably couldn't have had a worse debut in his first preseason game. He dropped two wide open balls, and right. You know, again, how every coach is, Steve, if you don't do it when the lights are on, right. Sometimes it can be hard to get back out there when the lights are on. You know, he stuck with it, and as soon as there was an injury, he stepped right up and performed well in his very first chance. And you know, again, just as much as performing poorly will put you in the doghouse, when you do it in a regular season game, in a big game, as these all are, you know, your quarterback is able to have confidence in you, that goes a long, long way toward the coach and the coaching staff gaining confidence. So I think that answer is an absolute yes, a resounding yes. And in fact, I think, and this may be early, I'm probably putting, jumping ahead of myself here, but you have to think down the line, and there's no question, in my mind at least, that the Steelers have to be somewhat intrigued and somewhat happy and pleased with the fact that they may have somebody who could be a tight end, a starting tight end down the line whenever Heath Miller is no longer playing.
So the secondary, and your reaction probably is, do we have to? But I mean, what are the issues here? I mean, are they a poor zone team? Do the linebackers not help out enough in zone? Are they just a poor man team? What is the issue?
Well, I think it's a combination of those things. I mean, and you can throw some, you know, given their physical issues, and you can throw, like I said, both of those in there. I think that the linebackers are not great helping out in zone. I think that a lot of these young linebackers are a little bit confused at times, or maybe I shouldn't say confused. I think they're just simply thinking too much, like a lot of young players are given to do. And Lawrence Timmons, quite frankly, is probably on the side where, you know, he knows exactly where he needs to be and when, but his body's finally starting to show signs of not being able to get there when it needs to. You know, the age old problem for aging veterans. You know, once they know exactly where they need to be, it's harder to get there. And then, yes, you know, these guys have problems. I mean, you know, this is, you know, listen, Ross Cockrell and Antoine Blake and William Gay are the three cornerbacks who are playing the most. They're, you know, Cockrell and Blake are kind of shuffling in and out of the nickel spot. Right. All three of those guys have been cut over the past 2 years.
Right.
You know, Gay's a little bit different because he was a salary cap casualty. But Pittsburgh signed him thinking he would be the nickelback. Instead, he is their best by far. starting corner. So they just have a bunch of guys who, quite frankly, are not supposed to be starting NFL cornerbacks, and that's what they're left with. And, you know, we talked about Seattle's receivers not being great. Well, they had a field day. They're not great.
Right.
And, you know, they had a field day against this team. They're playing with a little bit of injuries. Mike Mitchell has a pretty significant knee issue right now. And Antoine Blake has a shoulder issue, appears to have a shoulder issue that the team doesn't seem to want to talk about, nor does he. But when you watch him play, he's clearly favoring, one shoulder. It's part of the reason I think he wasn't able to make some tackles. He was truly tackling with one arm last week. So unless that's his new technique, there seems to be some sort of a shoulder issue with Antoine Blake. But all those things combined have really made them a detriment.
Bud Dupree, they spot him at times. What do you think about his play so far as the first round pick of the Steelers?
You know, I think he's getting better and better, and I think he is a guy who needs to be on the field more and more. He's probably one of the few defensive players who had a pretty darn good game against Seattle. Cameron Hayward seems to have a good game every week. Lawrence Timmons is extremely solid as well. But, you know, Dupree is a guy who probably has earned a little bit more time. He's, you know, for his size, he's extremely athletic, and he's faster than you think he might be. You know, he's a guy who I think is going to be seeing more and more time, because he's a guy who, again, seems to be able to do both things fairly well. He's pretty good in space. He can drop into coverage fairly well. And I don't know that they have a better linebacker as far as getting to the quarterback. So, the Steelers are going to have to make that decision. Perhaps he's looked good because, like you said, he's been spotted at times and they've been able to choose his situation. So that obviously, you know, can make you look a lot better than you actually are at times. But it may be time, especially given their situation and given the rest of the athletes they have on the defensive side of the ball, where you got to turn them loose.
At this moment, the Steelers would be on the outside looking into the playoff picture at this moment. Now, it should be pointed out that next week, the Sunday night game is going to be Houston's going to play New England coming up in the Sunday night game. That's next week. What's the feel around this team? What do they need to have happen here in the next two or three weeks to change the tone of things?
Well, you know, somehow they need to shore up that defensive secondary. I think that really is the biggest issue. For them, Steve, they've got plenty of opportunities. You know, I mean, a win this week knocks the Colts down a peg, moves them up a peg, and probably if things would end, you know, Monday night this week, there's a very good chance they could be on the inside of that situation.
Right.
So, the opportunities are certainly going to be there. They've either got to figure out a way to get to the quarterback, or they've got to figure out a way to disguise that secondary. And I say disguise because after 11 weeks, you know, what are the chances that they actually improve? I don't know that that's going to happen. We may see some personnel changes back there. For the first time, you know, this year, we may actually see some shuffling. After 11 weeks, you know, 12 weeks of the season, 11 games, you think it's probably time to do that. But again, they're limited there as well. Boykin may be a guy who this is a guy they traded for, Steve, and he really hasn't played many snaps in the secondary at all. He's been limited to special teams. He may finally get a chance to play some snaps, some meaningful snaps in, first, second, third down situations for the first time really all season. But again, is he going to be the guy that pushes them over the line? Boy, if they couldn't play him after 11 games, it seems kind of hard to think he's going to be the guy that's going to make that big a difference.
Tony, Hasselbeck's actually 4-0 as a starter this year, but we all know Luck in the end is their quarterback. When you've have the Steelers indicated there's any difference as to how the Colts attack with Hasselbeck as the quarterback?
It's been hard to get Mike Tomlin to talk about the opposing team a whole lot this week. He usually does a much better job of that. I think things were so bad on Sunday that he was sticking more with let's address our problems before we worry about them. Again, you got that same line out of Mike Tomlin. And it's true. Hasselbeck's a very capable NFL quarterback, and he will find the weaknesses in that Pittsburgh lineup, and there are plenty of weaknesses to be found. But you didn't hear much beyond that. I think Tomlin's, and probably correctly so, a little bit more worried about his own guys this week. And again, that is slightly unusual. He usually expounds upon the other team and the opposition. He didn't do that so much this week.
Can you play first base? I mean, there's an opening.
Yeah, I can have a historically bad defensive season if that's what you're looking for. That would be something Pedro Alvarez did last year. I can do that. I can tell you that.
It wouldn't be a change. I was in Boston Wednesday, where I tell you right now, the words are the price is right. $217 million. He has an opt out after 3 years, though, so the Pirates can then sign him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. But again, it's kind of a painful separation with Pedro Alvarez leaving, because you think about what this might have been. But the strikeouts and the lack of defense really offset the tremendous power, and it is something to behold. Watching Pedro hit a ball into the river, you don't get to see something like that too often. And again, as fun as that was to watch, and as genuinely decent a guy as Pedro seems to be, at the end of the day, you got to help out a little bit more than he has. And the defense was just shockingly bad at two different positions.
Tony, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Have a good weekend.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Still to come on the show, Chris Soleri from the Lansing State Journal on tomorrow's Iowa-Michigan State Big Ten Championship game on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Don't forget tonight, Sealands Grove back in action, state quarterfinals. Kevin on the road with the team. He's going to be the sideline reporter tonight. And, of course, you have Pat O'Brien and Ryan Brandt on the call on Eagle 107 tonight. 6 o'clock will be the airtime. 7 o'clock will be the kickoff as Sealands Grove tries to win its way into the state semifinals. That is coming up tonight. Tomorrow, Penn State basketball with Michigan State. That will be a noon start, 11:30 on the air. Don't forget, Santa's on our air tonight between 6 and 7. Penn State women's soccer team is a half hour away from their College Cup semifinal. They will take on Rutgers in the national semifinal in Cary, North Carolina tonight. Penn State women's volleyball team looking to defend their national championship begins that road tonight in Rec Hall at 7:30. And they'll play again tomorrow night should they win at 7. I think Dayton and Villanova, the other half of the bracket. And we'll find out about the Penn State bowl game coming up on Sunday. It is either the Tax Slayer or the Music City. That's my understanding as the only two that are now in play. And a lot will depend on Clemson, North Carolina. If Clemson wins the game, which I think they will, then Clemson goes into the final four. Florida State is already ninth. They probably would inch up a bit to maybe 7 or 8. Florida State, in all likelihood, would go to the Peach Bowl. It's part of the New Year's Six. That opens the door for Penn State to go to Jacksonville. If Clemson loses, they'd probably get the Peach Bowl. And Florida State might be X'd out of the New Year's Six, which then put them in Jacksonville, which then the domino would be Penn State going to Nashville. That's how I understand it. We'll see how it plays out on Sunday. James Franklin, by the way, check him out tomorrow night. As he will be on Fox. He'll be on the pregame, halftime, postgame on Fox tomorrow with Matt Leinart, Rob Stone, Dave Wonstadt. So that's good to see the coach. I mean, he'll be terrific on there. He is really, really good. Very smooth. I will send him a text here in a few minutes telling him not to try and take my job. I will get some smart aleck remark back, I guarantee you. Next half hour, Chris Soleri, Lansing State Journal, on the Michigan State-Iowa matchup. And he is in Indianapolis to cover it. That is, without question, a quarterfinal playoff game. The winner moves on, the loser does not. That simple. Can't quite say that, for example, about the ACC title game between Clemson and North Carolina. Because if North Carolina were to win, they would probably not be in the Final Four. Iowa and Michigan State, the winner is going to be in the Final Four. That's why that is more of a true quarterfinal playoff game. Also tomorrow, Alabama plays Florida. I don't know if Florida can score. Stanford plays USC tomorrow in the Pac-12 championship game. Houston takes on Temple tomorrow. That game's in Houston. Coming up tonight, it's the MAC championship, Northern Illinois and Bowling Green. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors here with 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews. Best selection of beer anywhere, and on top of it, they have a great selection of soft drinks. They also have water, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day, and that pickle bar is second to none. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the weekend. Start stocking up for the holidays right now as well at Brewers Outlet. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kierwitz 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. FIFA. Meeting to discuss reform. If any organization in sports needs to discuss reform, it is FIFA. The interim president of FIFA chaired the event, at which point, about 45 minutes into the meeting, he was seen asleep. Yes, he fell asleep during the all-important reform meeting for FIFA. Easily our sports bozo of the day. You only have one job. You fell asleep. Tomorrow, Big Ten championship game. Of all the title games in college football tomorrow, this is the only one that has a genuine quarterfinal feel to it, where you know the winner is in to the semifinal and you know the loser is out. You can't say that in the others. Alabama, Florida. If Florida were to win, they're not in. If North Carolina were to beat Clemson, they're not in. Stanford, USC, neither one's going to be in. But Michigan State and Iowa, the winner is in. And the loser's out. It has a real quarterfinal feel to it. Let's bring in Chris Soleri, Lansing State Journal, who joined us last week on the show to preview Penn State and Michigan State. Chris, I want to get to something first, and that's the rivalry between Ohio State and Michigan, which over time I've felt, while hyped, was overrated. I've always felt that. And I think the many years where they allegedly had great teams, they hurt the conference with poor bowl performances and so forth. Woody Hayes only won 5 bowl games at Ohio State. Bo only won 5 bowl games at Michigan. They did not enhance the conference's reputation over that time. How sick and tired after 9 years
is Mark D'Antonio of hearing about Ohio State and Michigan when he's winning a lot of games himself?
It's more than just that. I mean, remember, he was here as an assistant under Nick Saban as well. So this goes all the way back to 1995 for him. And, you know, it's something that permeates the culture here. And really, the culture changed when D'Antonio took over his first year and went after Mike Hart, who made the little brother comments. And that's really stuck. And that's been, if you want to talk about a program that has a chip on its shoulder, everybody talks about Michigan State having that chip on its shoulder. That's the chip. That's the biggest chip. And it doesn't matter if you're a top five program. It doesn't matter if you are contending for a national title. It doesn't matter if you're looking at the college football playoffs. No matter what, you're still chasing what's going on in Ann Arbor. You're still behind the attention of Jim Harbaugh. You're still fighting for the Detroit market. I mean, this is all those things that build up. And it does get frustrating, I think, both to D'Antonio and the fan base. But the fan base used to be resigned to it. And I think they've kind of, in the last decade, 9 years since Mark D'Antonio took over, have really embraced his attitude towards it. Like, hey, yeah, we're tired of hearing this. And, you know, it's funny because those questions are going to keep coming up, you know, in part because the old guard media has really just known Michigan, Ohio State to be the big game. But now when you look at it, I mean, Michigan State, Iowa, and Michigan State, Ohio State, those have all been big games the past, you know, 5 or 6 years now. And Michigan really hasn't had that yet. You know, I guess we'll see. But D'Antonio definitely bristles any time that's brought up.
So far in this thing, 5 years of the Big Ten championship game, Michigan State's playing in its third. Michigan's never played in it. Michigan State's won a Rose Bowl, which is something doesn't happen that often at Michigan. I mean, look, when you go year after year after year, you're the team winning games. Why isn't it apparent even to the old guard media which one's the better program at the moment?
Well, I think when you have a media megastar like Jim Harbaugh cracking Buckeye nuts on Bo Schembechler's grave, that kind of tells you something. And that's being covered by the media and by the reporters. Michigan's just got that, I guess, money behind it. If you want a look at it, Michigan State's the blue collar program. Right. It's the place where the auto workers' sons and daughters went to school to become teachers, to become engineers. And Michigan has that elitist East Coast, you know, New York transient money kind of feel to it, and you know, high powered kid. I mean, it's a definite culture difference here. And I don't even know if there is a comparable. Maybe with some of the Philly schools, maybe if you look at like a Penn and a Temple, say, in Philadelphia. Right. You know, it's tough with Pitt and Penn State being on their own islands out there. But, you know, because they're so close together, because, I mean, it takes 45 minutes to an hour to get to Ann Arbor. I don't think there are any other Big Ten schools that are that close together. They've got huge alumni bases, huge student populace. But Michigan is closer to Detroit, and Michigan had 40 years of success, you know, between 1968 when Schembechler took over and, you know, up until when Lloyd Carr left. So I think Michigan State's always fighting that. They've always had problems here in East Lansing up until maybe the last decade or so. You know, it takes a while to get rid of that inferiority complex in people's minds.
Yeah, I think I'd go with Villanova Temple. I think would be a little bit better. You know, the suburban Philly school versus the in city school and so forth. All right, now the game with Iowa coming up. What makes it interesting is the two teams did not play during the course of the regular season. When you've looked at Iowa, and you know, I actually had to get a hold of Gary Dolphin saying, "Hey, Gary, give me some hints as to where to go on my ballot." For example, with Iowa, so I'm not missing somebody, especially a lineman. I can tell a Desmond King's having a great year. I mean, anybody can figure that out, but like a, you know, line play, I'd like to know a little bit. What do you think of Iowa?
Well, I think Iowa runs a very similar system to what Kirk Ferentz has always been. I mean, there's some tweaks here and there, but you know what you're getting with Iowa. You're getting a lot of what you're getting with Michigan State. You want a power run game. You want basically win the game in the trenches. A lot of time, I mean, they're throwing the ball better this year with Beathard. I think Beathard is right behind Connor Cook. And actually kind of a younger version, a more inexperienced version of Connor Cook. He can get out of the pocket. He can make plays with his arm. He can make plays with his legs, keep things alive a little bit. And I think that's why you're seeing Iowa score at 33 points a game. And that's that, you know, if you would have asked me in, say, you know, September or October, how many points a game will Iowa score? You know, come Big Ten play, you know, you get used to Iowa teams being, you know, maybe in that high teens, low 20s area. But, I mean, they've done a good job on offense, you know, established with the running game, and they've had guys in and out with the running game. Ferentz puts a tough-minded product on the field. And Michigan State and Iowa have had some really epic battles between Ferentz and D'Antonio over the past 9 years. They haven't met since 2013, but there were two overtime games. There were a couple last-second touchdowns, one last-second touchdown, one last-second stop. So, I mean, this is I expect this to be a very hard-fought competitive game, even if the odds makers don't necessarily think so.
Connor Cook, I thought, played a beautiful game against Penn State on Saturday. But I did notice at the end of the half, when it came time to throw the Hail Mary, he was taken out and Tyler O'Connor was brought in. And Jack Ham and I made note of that right away when he came in. Is that a hint on his ability to throw the deep ball right now, or because it's an extra week, he should be okay in that regard?
That's kind of what they have said. You know, it's kind of a precautionary thing. But I think when you saw he threw that early 29-yard touchdown pass to R.J. Shelton, and that looked like classic Connor Cook.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
Over the top, great spiral, good velocity on it. And I think you saw the velocity. I think that was just maybe a precautionary thing, just to, you know, hey, don't take the chance on that right now. If it happens, it happens. If not, you know, it's a low risk, you know, a low, high risk, low reward kind of play if you do it anyways. And I mean, it failed, but it is something worth keeping note of. And I think the other injury, you know, Trevin Pendleton, the starting fullback, left that game and was on crutches on the sideline at the end. And he's a guy that has been integral in Michigan State's running game over the past 3 years, but as a blocker, but also he's a guy that has made some big plays. He scored a touchdown in the Rose Bowl. He scored the touchdown at Ohio State. He's a guy that makes big plays when you least expect him to. So if he's out, that's something to keep an eye on.
He runs that wheel route from fullback about as well as anybody in the country. I mean,
nobody seems to cover him. I mean, he's huge. You know, how can you miss that guy just floating out there?
Exactly. Penn State, Saquon Barkley, who's obviously a tremendously talented back, he had, 103 in the game. Chris Godwin had 109 yards receiving in the game. How much concern is there at Michigan State defensively against a team like Iowa that does have such an effective ground game?
Well, I know that Michigan State's players came away highly, highly impressed and singing praises of Saquon Barkley, and I think everybody upstairs in the press box did as well. I mean, he's the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
And he may have been, you know, especially after seeing Ezekiel Elliott, he seemed a little more electric. Now, we didn't see Elliott on a great day, but we saw him last year here. And, you know, he was electric. I thought Barkley did more with less in front of him. I thought he was really good. But I think the pass defense, I think Michigan State's pass defense has been suspect. And I think he saw some of that in that game. And, you know, when you look at it, they beat you, though, with other ways. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be all in coverage. They'll knock the ball out. In fact, one of those big plays, Monte Nicholson nearly stripped it and got it back from Michigan State there. They had an interception return for a touchdown. They had a fumble return for a touchdown. So this year's defense isn't the same as maybe the last two. In that it's more of a bend but don't break rather than a stifle you kind of defense.
Yeah, I want to ask you about Shalique Calhoun. Obviously Michigan State played great, won the game, the whole deal, but I felt he was quiet all day.
Had a year like that, and I think he's drawn a lot more attention this year. I think you're seeing, you know, part of it too is that he's, you know, the Nebraska game was one where he struggled. He was being held in that game, and rather than fighting through it, he was complaining to the referees, and I think that kind of was one of those things that people took notice of. He wasn't fighting through it, but he sees a lot of double teams. And I mean, he gets outside and makes some plays. He's still got 8.5 sacks this year, which is a career high. It's hard to think that, especially when you see a guy like Nassib, who's just been so dominant this year for Penn State. And I think he, you know, you saw how different you guys are with without him in there.
Right.
But yeah, Calhoun's a guy that, you know, he's going to make some plays, but the attention that he draws really has opened things up for a guy like Malik McDowell in the middle, who I think is having a phenomenal year at defensive tackle. It's a kid who came in as more of a stand, you know, kind of a 4-3 end, and they moved him inside. They convinced him to go inside, and he's been a real star in there. And I think that's part of it. You're seeing more in the middle based on the attention Calhoun draws outside.
You've done a lot of research on this game for Saturday. What are the swing factors in this game as you view it?
Well, I mean, for Michigan State, the two things are pass defense and special teams. Those have been the Achilles heels all season. And I think the pass defense, really, for Iowa, they have to contain Connor Cook and Michigan State's receivers. I think those are the swing factors, but I do think that this game is going to be that classic win it in the trenches Big Ten game. I mean, whoever gets, if Michigan State on their front seven can get pressure on Beathard and wrap up and not allow them to extend plays, I think Michigan State wins this game.
And the other part, too, is probably trying to keep some control over Desmond King, because obviously he's a safety, but also as a kick returner, he's dynamic.
Yeah, and he's a kid from Detroit that I think that Michigan State kind of kicking himself, they let get away. This is the kind of kid that they've built their program success on. And, you know, he may be a little bit undersized for where they've been, but he's a dynamic playmaker. And, I mean, that Michigan State struggled in punt coverage. They've struggled in kickoff coverage this season. It has been better lately, but, you know, those kind of things always tend to rear their ugly heads in big game situations when players will tend to blank out. And there's a lot of guys on Michigan State special teams that are true freshmen, younger players that, you know, haven't experienced this big game scenario yet. So seniors have been kind of trying to indoctrinate them and get them baptized on what it's going to be like at Lucas Oil Stadium, what that environment's going to be like, and really what the magnitude of the game is. I mean, this is a small window to play for a national title that Michigan State's experiencing right now, and they're one win away from that. But then again, so is Iowa.
It's a quarterfinal, essentially.
It really is.
Hey, Chris, thanks so much. Appreciate the time, and apologize that we didn't cross paths when I was there on Saturday.
That's okay. We all got kind of busy up there as well, and I ended up down in the field towards the end of the game, too. So let's keep in touch, and anytime you need something, just give me a holler.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
All right, you guys. Take care.
Chris Soleri, Lansing State Journal. We'll wrap it up. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the Pickle Bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
All right, final segment of the show, and we did get a call when I was talking with Chris Soleri from the Lansing State Journal, and the caller had two questions. One was, will Carl Nassib be playing in the bowl game? Yes, he will. His injury is something that just takes time. It's something that bugged him in the preseason, and then when the season started, he was set and ready to go. And the fact is, Carl Nassib has not played really, he's played total, four plays since November 7th? In all likelihood, Penn State's playing January 2nd. He will be 100% for the game. There's no doubt in my mind about that. So it's hamstrings are tricky, but that takes time. And my guess is if they were to play the game the day of the football banquet, which is December 13th, he'd be playing and be 100%. He also asked about a possible bowl opponent. And a possible bowl opponent is down to this. If they go to the Tax Slayer Bowl, it's either LSU or Georgia. If they go to the Music City Bowl, it's either Tennessee, Georgia, or LSU. So it's either LSU or Georgia in Jacksonville, or Tennessee, Georgia, LSU in the Music City Bowl. And I did it in that order for a reason. So that would be the opponent. It would be an SEC opponent either way. It would not be a non-SEC opponent. The other side of the bracket, the Music City and the Tax Slayer Bowls, are both SEC-related bowls. And again, if Clemson wins, I'm 98% sure Penn State's going to Jacksonville. Simple as that. I actually do think it is that simple now. But those are the only two bowls. My understanding is those are the only two bowls for Penn State that are in play. And I think based on the Clemson-North Carolina, if Clemson wins, then the Tax Slayer Bowl, Gator Bowl, goes. I think they're already to the front to begin with, but I think a Clemson win would probably solidify that because I think it would then solidify Florida State's spot in the New Year's Six. That's my logic and reasoning behind that. Terrible news about James Conner. Stage 2 Hodgkin's lymphoma. Tumors in his neck and his chest. Great football player. ACC Offensive Player of the Year in 2014. Tore his MCL in the opener this year, which is obviously knocked him out for the season. As I mentioned earlier, Jack Hammond run into him and had a long talk with him at a charity golf tournament. He said, Steve, he's a great kid. So, James Conner, we are rooting for you to beat this. It is, by the way, 85 to 95% success rate. That's the good part. And he'll get a lot of help at Pitt. And all over the place in college football in battling this. All right. Fun week. Hope you enjoyed it. If you missed any of it, check out the Steve Jones Show podcast. Next week, let's see. We will do the show from Washington, D.C. on Tuesday. A pair of rec hall games next week. Monday, we'll know about the bowl situation, and we're going to have a show dealing with that. Today's show has been brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the weekend now, and stock up for the holidays now. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. You don't want to be short during the holidays. Water, soda, they roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Pickle bar is second to none, plenty of snacks.